Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 108. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Monday evening for a Tuesday morning show is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Monday night.
Happy Monday night, Dave. This time, when people listen, you're going to be in the air, wheels up, right? A little vacation. Well-deserved vacation.
Yeah, I think this will go up on the web, obviously, before I leave. But I'm doing a rarity, and that's taking a vacation. I think 2000 and what did we say? 2011. Or no, 2014. See, I already forgot that.
Wait. Dave, you're getting old, man.
You hit 50 and it's all downhill. 2014, I think, was the last time I really, quote unquote, officially had a vacation. And lo and behold, we came out to Vegas for that. And it was about this time during the offseason as well, too. In fact, it was early. I think it was in early March because free agency had just started and all. Because I remember being in Vegas when the Steelers signed Mike Mitchell. So that's how long ago it's been. We're going to go to Washington, D.C. next week. I'm going to try to force myself to not think about the Steelers and the site and try to get away. But you know, I know things will be in good hands with you and Matthew Marksy running the controls here. But let's get right to it, Alex. The Steelers rookie minicamp 2018 wrapped up on Sunday, as is usually the case. You know, we don't get a ton of info. You know, not you know, really anything related to overall performance of players and things of that nature. Although, you know, Mike Tomlin did say a couple of flattering things about players such as Terrell Edmonds and Marcus Allen and Mason Rudolph and James Washington. But all in all, really, there wasn't a lot to you know, I guess fawn over would be the correct word there. But you know, we did get a few nuggets out of the you know the weekend just the same. And before we kind of review some of these things, I want you to guess what my biggest takeaway was from the Steelers 2018 rookie minicamp.
Well, I can do a shameless plug and say you have a very nice article on Steelers Depot that has a slew of takeaways here. Your biggest takeaway, though, I'm going to go with the Mike Tomlin love affair with Mason Rudolph.
No. I did, in case any of you missed it, they took a team picture, which I think I don't know if they've done that every year or not. I was a bit shocked to see it, but they took in kind of a higher level, you know, team picture of those players that participated in the rookie minicamp and posted on Steelers.com, and I took that and kind of zoomed in on it. I said, well, where's Mike Tomlin in this picture? And I finally had found him, and lo and behold, he's standing right next to Mason Rudolph. So, and being as how that happened on Mother's Day, I blew that up and cut that section out and said something to the effect of on this Mother's Day, make sure you love your mother the way Mike Tomlin loves Mason Rudolph. So I think that actually got liked 100 times. So I guess a few people found my humor in that, but no, that wasn't going to be my biggest takeaway. You care to make one more guess?
I'm terrible at the Dave Bryan guessing game. I don't know. Just tell me what's up.
Marcus Tucker and some of the things that he had to say during his interview that in case any of you missed it, it's up on Steelers.com. It's hard to believe this was this guy's third rookie minicamp. Where does the time go? It seems like yesterday he's being signed. Wasn't he a tryout player?
He was. He's an embodiment of the rookie minicamp and how valuable it is for every guy there.
Right, and you know, this is, of course, being as how he's yet to play in a game, you know, or even be on the 53-man roster. Now, he was on the Steelers practice squad all year, again last year, and that's a good sign for him. But I really, my biggest takeaway was his interview, and look, I already kind of knew that I liked the guy. Of course, there's not much to go on with him outside of really what you've been able to report at training camp over the last couple of years. And then the preseason games, and probably most notably, final preseason game last year, right? Against Carolina, that was really, if there's such thing as a Marcus Tucker coming out party, that was it. His performance in that game, especially late in the fourth quarter, there. This is a kid that really, you know, kind of a prototypical Steeler player, if you will, especially in the leadership category. And I was very impressed. And several, I think, players or other wide receivers have talked about how instrumental he was this past weekend and kind of, you know, kind of teaching them and showing them ropes and making sure, I guess, they line up and you know, in the right places and things along that nature. But that was my biggest takeaway, I think, was the interview with him. And make no mistake about it, you know, and I think you and I even had Marcus Tucker in our initial 53-man roster projections, which at this time of year is useless, but we do it anyway. This is a kid that, I mean, if he has another good preseason, if he can show anything on special teams, you know, maybe he makes the roster this time.
He could. It's a perfect storm for it, where you have kind of him coming into probably the peak of his game in terms of comfort as a Steeler and, you know, been around the block a couple times now, and the lack of depth at receiver for Pittsburgh right now. He could make it as a number five, maybe that reserve number six, someone that I think can wear a lot of hats. He can play on the outside. He can play in the slot. He can run down punts. He can do a little return work. It's really got, you know, a little bit of work there. So versatile guy. Like you said, I think a guy well-respected, a good head on his shoulders. I talked to him right after he signed with the Steelers back in 2015. You know, as a tryout guy from, where'd he go, Northern Michigan, whatever college you went to that no one's ever heard of, a Flint, Michigan guy. We know what that city's been through. So the guy's been from the bottom, and he's working his way up, and he had a good week, and it's nice to hear him kind of take those guys under his wing, because it's rookie minicamp, and these guys are almost brand new to it. There is no AB there. There is no DHB. Obviously, Richard Mann is gone, and I know Drake's a good receivers coach, but, you know, there's a lot of new to the room, and so it's good to see Tucker do that. And yeah, I think he's got a chance.
Yeah, I do too. And that just shows you how the kind of information coming out of the rookie minicamp this past weekend that we're talking about. At least in my eyes, my biggest takeaway was hearing Marcus Tucker talk, and then the other players talking about Marcus Tucker. So, you know, that was one of my biggest takeaways. Now, obviously, other things did happen, and you know, as you noted, I have a post up on Steelers Depot up on Monday about the takeaways. The team obviously now has four of their seven draft picks under contract, and Joshua Frazier, Jalen Samuels, Marcus Allen, and James Washington. It's only a matter of time before Edmonds and Rudolph and Okorocor are signed as well. You know, as we mentioned, Mike Tomlin had some good things to say about Edmonds and Allen, especially when it comes to the communication aspect. And boy, that's been a hot button, it seems, for like three or four years now when it comes to that. So Mike Tomlin was chatty about the chatting that was going on between those with those safeties, who, by the way, you know, were able to show off a little bit of versatility, evidently. We kind of expected as such, especially with Edmonds, you know, kind of a, you know, seeing some you know, I guess dime linebacker kind of snaps there during the rookie mini camp. Rudolph got to show off his arm a little bit. Some comments about that. Him and James Washington made a few plays over the weekend. And look, I mean, that should be expected, as much as those two have played together over the course of the last 4 years. So that definitely is good. There's a little bit of chatter, I think, about Matthew Thomas, as expected, out of Florida State, who, you know, even though he didn't get the highest signing bonus of the undrafted free agents this year, he is the guy, probably odds-on favorite you know, to be an undrafted free agent, to have, you know, probably at one of the better shots at making the 53-man roster this year. Quadre Henderson, you know, good to hear him talk, and it's good that he knows that he's going to have to be a little bit more than a return man with the Steelers. Obviously, the Steelers are expecting him to excel in that role, you know, during the rest of the offseason, of course, in the preseason, being as how he did the job very well at Pitt. The question is can this guy function any as a wide receiver? He didn't have a lot of catches there at Pitt. It was mostly a, you know, kind of a gadget guy, if you will. And, you know, it'll be interesting to watch him moving forward into the offseason. And two other guys they brought in for tryouts, wide receiver Damon Patterson and guard R.J. Prince. Patterson is a young product of Youngstown State. Prince is a product of North Carolina. And really, quickly going over Patterson's film, Alex, not a lot really stuck out to me, him, you know, as far as his wide receiver play. But, you know, maybe this guy ended up making, you know, getting signed to a roster because he's not afraid to do some stuff on special teams. And I think when quickly going over, you know, a little bit of his tape, that's what stuck out the most to me about Patterson. And R.J. Prince is a guy that the Steelers reportedly had a little bit of interest leading up to the draft. You know, obviously he's going to have a very, very, very tough shot at making the 53-man roster. But maybe this is a guy that shows you something from this point forward that, you know, and warrants getting a practice squad spot.
Yeah, no, I think you covered it really well. As far as I'm aware, no major injury, so that's kind of the first thing you look at. He came on rookie minicamp, you know, with good health overall. The two tryout guys signed, that's why I think I take at least a really close eye on these tryout guys, because I think it's the fourth straight year that's been at least two tryout players signed. And, you know, Marcus Tucker was a tryout guy. Terrence Garvin was a tryout guy. So there are always names to keep an eye on. You're right about, well, let me ask you this about Patterson. What in special teams stuck out to you? Was it a return thing? Was it a coverage thing? Or was it kind of both?
Yeah, it's just more of a coverage thing. I think okay. He had 17 tackles over the course of the last two seasons.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's high. I mean, and especially for a wide receiver. You know,
yeah.
Obviously, I've not tracked down every one of them, but just in the coverage aspect, him getting downfield, you know, that's the thing that stuck out to me the most. And I think isn't he was the Iowa State guy that went to JUCO and then to Youngstown State, right?
Utah State.
Utah State. That's right.
And he did coverage work there. He only talked about two passes his lone year at Utah State, but I think he had six special teams tackles as well. Then he transferred to Highland, JUCO College, and then came to Youngstown State. So again, more hats you can wear, the better. And then Prince, like you said, was a guy that they were interested in, and they released one of the UDFAs with a name I can't pronounce.
You're going to have to pronounce it.
He was a UDFA lineman from Elon who got the smallest signing bonus. I think it's what, $2K in dead money with him.
Right. Ikenna? Is it Ikenna?
I think it's like Ikenna and Woke J, something like that.
Good. That's about as good as effort as the listeners are going to get out of us, I think, when it comes out. Yeah, out of Elon. I don't know. Where's Elon at?
East Coast-ish somewhere, I think.
Okay, yeah.
They're a small FCS school.
Yeah, and look, I mean, for an undrafted free agent to wash out this early is not uncommon. I mean, we've seen over the years a lot of them wash out before June 1st. And for those curious, if a player, like an undrafted free agent, is cut prior to June 1st, the complete signing bonus becomes dead money instantly. Now, if they're cut after June 1st, then that's when the post June 1st, you know, you immediately are charged for the first part of the signing bonus that was already scheduled for this year, and then the rest of it rolls over into dead money the next year though. So only $2,000 in dead money there by cutting him. And look, it's not going to be surprising if a few more of these undrafted guys wash out prior to training camp.
Yeah, you know, we'll see what happens. Again, any injuries that might happen and more, you know, OTAs and other mini camps. But yeah, my takeaways, again, it's 3 days of rookie mini camp. It's all base stuff. It's install. They're going, you know, generally kind of a half speed thing. While these guys learn the mental side, the physical side's kind of secondary. So it was nice to see Tomlin talk about the communication, because Dave, and I know that you know this, but communication was the number one issue with the defense last year. It wasn't necessarily a lack of talent. It was just a lack of clarity, communication, guys being on the same page. And the Steelers were in trouble really all year long, but it didn't really bite them in the butt until the last 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season and the playoff game against Jacksonville. So, you know, that's going to be a thing. Everyone has to work on so many new, you know, faces with this defense, but that's nice to see. And then, you know, Ron Lippick has done several interviews with the tryout players, and I swear, I mean, every single one that's been interviewed, when, you know, Ron asks who kind of stuck out, I think every answer has been Mason Rudolph and or James Washington. So again, like you said, expected for that connection that they have, but that's nice to see kind of get confirmation of that. And from, I think one of the guys said Washington's conditioning was a really kind of surprise and one of the toughest guys to face. And that's something Randy Feetner talked about when Washington got drafted, was that, well, you know, he's not a 4-4 guy like Martavis Bryant. His conditioning allows him to be the same guy on the first snap as he is the last snap. And maybe we're getting a little kind of confirmation of that. And, you know, with Tomlin, conditioning is paramount. You know, he lauded T.J. Watt in camp last year for the conditioning, for the background he has with his brothers and his football family. So James Washington could be in a similar boat that's going to let him play and play at a high level in year one.
A farm boy, too, you know?
Yeah, so. You know he's conditioned. You know he's not opposed to work.
And, you know, I think and still the thing that amazes me, I think the most about him and going back, looking at there were a few, you know, Chark, the kid out of LSU I liked this year, but not a large sample of work. And I think I know David and I talked about this a few times. If there's one kid that you – or one wide receiver in this year's draft class you probably had the less guesswork about what he is coming out of college, it has to be Washington.
Yeah, and you knew the Steelers' interest in him was pretty high as well. I think there's not going to be any issues with him from an off-field standpoint, his readiness, his character, anything like that. That goes, again, into the mantra of the hearts and smarts, and I think Washington checks all those boxes.
Nothing's guaranteed, but you sure have to be, you know, even with 4-5 speed that he had, sure found a way to get open. I think the biggest surprise to me was really the third down. He wasn't targeted all that much on third downs, especially the last couple of years, you know, at Oklahoma State. And now look, make no mistake about it, when you go and you watch a large portion of Oklahoma State tape over the last couple of years, they have some talent on that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got that running back number 5. I think they call him Hollywood. He's like a sophomore, but he's going to be something special.
And who's that other wide receiver over there? Man, I mean,
they had Aitman and Chris Lacy this past year.
Right, both guys right, yeah. Right. I mean, that was a talented team. Offensively, and you know, and I mean, that's not a takeaway. Until Mason Rudolph, we can talk about what we think Mason may or may not be. We're not going to know who he is until, you know, probably not even until well after this preseason. And look, if there's one quarterback I've watched a lot of this offseason, it's him. And some impressive stuff. Now, the last time you and I talked about Mason Rudolph was immediately right after the draft. Okay. Now I know. Look, I mean, I put up. I'm sure you've seen the post, and you probably clicked on a lot of those plays with James Washington and stuff like that. Have you developed any more deeper thoughts on Mason Rudolph since we last talked?
Not so much on him on the field. I mean, I've kind of deferred to you because I know you've put in a ton of great work, and definitely be sure to check it out. I mean, you've caught up basically every sort of significant play, you know, good or bad, that he's had throughout his Oklahoma State career. That's kind of going to be one of my summer projects, kind of dead summer projects, where I kind of go through and really get a good feel for him on the field. But I'll say this, off the field, just the way he conducts himself and the way you can see him with the interviews and just kind of attack things when talking with the media and the confidence he has in himself, I think that's really important. We've heard some stuff about how he commands the huddle. I think Marcus Tucker was speaking to that, so that's kind of a veteran, at least a veteran of that group, talking about Rudolph commanding the huddle, and that's step one for me. From what I can tell, and you know, this is my 30,000 foot view on it, but he appears to be kind of one of those natural born leaders, the guy that elevates the group around him. And that's the, I think, a requirement, the foundation for good quarterback play, someone that can be a leader. So I think he's hit those boxes for me. I think you can tell he's kind of that guy that can succeed because he has the confidence and the ability to make guys better.
Yeah, when you go back and I've looked at, the 20-something interceptions that he had, and, nothing horrible sticks out. I think if the red flags, and, it's been a red flag we talked about him well before he was drafted, the ball velocity, especially throws, out to the bigger portion of the field. That I think that's a little bit of a concern. He can get the ball out there. It's just, maybe it's in his hips. I don't know how fixable it is, but another 5 or 6 yards, 7 yards in distance obviously would be nice, but he can get it out there. Just go look at the big plays of him in Washington. He can get the ball down the field. As far as him driving the ball as good as say a quarterback such as Mayfield or he's not that guy, but overall, When you go, and you're going to see this, Alex, when you look, especially his last 2 years of tape, there's not a lot not to like. Now, he did play in the shotgun 98.89% of the time, and if there's a one negative thing I think to come out of about Rudolph over the weekend, it's the fact that center exchanges under center, there were some balls on the ground, and that's probably going to be expected with a guy that spent that much time and especially working with a new center here in rookie minicamp. That's not excuses, it's just that's the facts.
Sure.
When it comes to that, so look, I've said this to David Todd a few times already. I think it was a lottery ball worth going after here. So, time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. And you're right. Yeah, the rookie minicamp stuff, you're going to get some of that sloppiness. Who knows whose fault it even was? It could be the center's fault for all we know. He's a new guy, too. He's probably more nervous than Rudolph is. So who knows what the issue was. You just care about that stuff getting cleaned up for camp. Because once LaTrobe happens, you can't have those wasted reps. But for now, it's all about learning.
All right. Anything else to you at all stick out? Like I said, we just probably for the next week or so, we'll get a couple of interviews that we didn't know existed. There's one with Jalen Samuels that went up on Steelers.com today, and I wrote a little bit about it this Monday afternoon as well. And not surprisingly, during rookie minicamp, they had him lining up all over the place, just as he did at North Carolina State. Now, you and I talked about him right after he was drafted, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on him because David Todd and I have, of course, talked about him recently as well, too. I'm not going to get into his versatility, this, that, and the other, but I think last time you and I talked about Jalen Samuels, we talked about the biggest concern with him is how he acts without the football in his hands, with the biggest emphasis being on pass protecting and blocking on the move and those sort of things. Now, I have obviously, this is another kid I have watched. I've watched 150 of his touches from last season. I know how they used this guy over the course of his career at North Carolina State, and boy, it was a lot of different ways. I still haven't researched, though, and I think you have by a couple of tweets of yours the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. What have you seen out of him, and how far back did you have to go to see him do any kind of blocking, and how much did he do, and how well was he at it?
Yeah, you do have to go back a little ways. I think a little off of talking about pass protection before, that I thought it was something that he had done more at NC State, but I really couldn't find much of any of that in 2017 because they just split him out if he was playing, if in a passing situation, maybe a tight end, or he would go on a pass route out of the backfield. So very little blocking in 2017. What I found in 2015, that this would have been a sophomore year, was that he did it a little bit more. They had an injury to one of their starters, Matthew Days, who was a draft pick for the Cleveland Browns, who missed, I think, the second half of the season. So he kind of split some time with another of their backs there, and you get some tape on that. It was okay. It's hard to tell, how much better he could be now because you're looking at a sophomore tape, compared to where he is now. But, he's got the frame to do it. I think there's a willingness to. I think he's got to be able to anchor. He's kind of catching too much, and it kind of gets him blown up in the couple clips that I saw. But I think there's a willingness to stay square and to kind of put his face in the fan, and I think that's a good first step to becoming a good pass protector.
You see him do anything on the move as a lead blocker or anything like from as an H-back split zone, any kind of on the move blocking?
I've seen some of that, even in his 2017 tape, because he was playing some tight end. He was playing a little bit of H-back. Now, most of the time, he was going out in a route. But there were times where they might run a draw, or, you know, there were some examples. Again, I think it's just okay as a blocker. I wouldn't expect him to be used much as a sort of lead blocker in any capacity. He doesn't have the size, the weight, or the length. He's got short arms, so I don't see him really being used in any kind of traditional sense like that. But when he gets to the third level, he can kind of wall off some safeties and guys like that because he just kind of gets in the way. But again, I think for that stuff, it's about a willingness, and I wouldn't expect him to be used much as a true tight end or even a whole lot as a fullback, maybe a little bit, but not too often.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if you see him. I told David this too. You're not going to see him on the end of the line. If he's on the end of the line of scrimmage, something's happening with him.
Yeah, he's going to be on the move.
Right. I mean, this is just not a guy. But, I mean, with all that said, I mean, if he's going to come in, if he's going to help alleviate some third downs, which I'll believe it when I see it when it comes to Le'Veon Bell, he's still got a block. I mean, people want to talk about, well, I had a question the other day asking me what I think about James Conner and the potential of him seeing the ball, you know, getting a few more touches in 2018. Look, the reason James Conner didn't see a lot of work last year all boils back down to that game against the Jacksonville Jaguars and him missing that pass protection that resulted in an interception, because that from that point forward, they didn't even mess with him. Want him in situations like that. And if there's one, if he wants to see the field more, he's going to have to pass protect, and there's no two ways around it when it comes to these running backs. We've seen, bless his heart, you know, Fitz Toussaint probably days are numbered overall, you know, in the NFL, probably in general. But there's one thing that kid could do in the last couple seasons, that was pick up a block in the backfield. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just about trust, and I think the reason why a guy like Toussaint has stuck around because they trust him to, you know, be making smart decisions in the return game, taking care of the football. I know people talk about the Denver game, but let's put that aside. But generally speaking, take care of the football, do the right thing, be assignment sound, his pass protection, be able to execute. So that's going to be paramount for any rookie running back. So many of these guys, whether it's Connor, Samuels, or 90% of, you know, running backs coming out of college football, struggle in pass protection because they just didn't have to do it. Now, I think the one leg up that Samuels has on guys like a Toussaint or a Connor situation is that he's a better receiver, and he's run the route tree, and he's kind of been, he was used more as a receiver than he was a runner. So I think even a situation where it's third down, they could hypothetically split, you know, Samuel out in the slot and then have Bell in the backfield. So Samuels won't have to pass protect, and Bell could, or he can release whatever they want to do with him. So I think you have some more options with Jalen Samuels that'll kind of help avoid maybe any sort of issues he has in pass protection that you really couldn't do with James Connor because he just was not a receiver at all.
And boy, have I gone over a lot of tape with him actually going downfield. Now granted, there's a lot of shovel passes. There's a lot of the thing is
end arounds.
Yeah, end arounds. The thing is, bless the hearts of these college play-by-play scores. You know, on these end arounds, if it's a true handoff on an end around, even if it's in front, then that's a run. But if that ball is just barely even flipped, you know, then it becomes a forward pass. You know, so you know, it gets a little bit deceiving. And there, make no mistake about it, with Jalen Samuels as well too. And people are going to see this when I finally get this post done. There were a lot of wide receiver screens too with him, you know, tunnel screens and smoke screens and those kind of things.
Yeah, it was. I'm sure it was a headache for you to try to parse through all the box score because it is tough. I mean, most of the jet sweep in college football are those little passes, because the idea is instead of a handoff, you pass the ball, so I think it's a little easier on the exchange. And if there's a drop, it's now an incomplete pass. It's not going to be considered a fumble, and you mitigate that risk. So, yeah, I mean, Samuel's route tree was not what I would call complex, and I don't think he's even a particularly great route runner because he's not going to get much separation. But you stick him on a linebacker, you put him in space, he's done it before, he's going to be comfortable with it. I think he has good hands. I think he is quick to the tuck. He can get upfield and be a yak threat. And he's just going to be, you know, if you get a linebacker, even a nickel corner or a safety or someone on 225 pounds, you know, that's a Seamless could break a tackle and make one guy miss, and we're off to the races. So I think there's just that versatility that's going to aid him.
I think the thing that stuck out with down the field passes, especially against zone, he knows how to get open, you know, against zone. And yep. Look, in the middle of the field, you know, there's 3, 4, 5 instances of him combative catching. You know, one, I think down in the red zone, I want to say it was against Florida State, got walloped, you know, pretty good, and held on to the football. Now, he did have a few easy drops as well, too. David and I were talking, is he or is he not the most intriguing draft pick this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. There's no wrong answer. I'm going to be most interested in how they use him, maybe more than any other pick, maybe Terrell Edmonds. But I don't know exactly how they're going to use Samuel, so that's going to be interesting. I think I'd still go with James Washington because I'm curious about how big of a year one impact he can make. I think he can make a big year one impact, but you know, we'll see what happens. So I guess if you maybe choose who's the most intriguing, I'd say James Washington, but Samuel is definitely a good pick.
You think Samuel's going to make the 53? Do you think he is the I think he has a chance of making a 53, but of the 7 draft picks at the same time, I think I would be least surprised if he didn't make the 53.
This is an easy answer, but I think Josh Frazier would be the guy I'd be least surprised in because he's a one-note plugger, and, you know, maybe a Greg Gilmore or someone, you know, makes it, or they do something different there. They do someone outside the organization. But I think Samuels will make it just for that versatility because he can wear so many hats, and I think that's going to just maximize the bottom of your roster. You can return, you can cover, you can catch, you can run. We'll see how he can do as a blocker. I mean, I think he's going to be pretty flexible in this offense. So I think that's a guy you want to stick around just in case whatever happens.
Have you watched much on Frazier? I mean, such a limited role, especially last couple seasons at Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, he's what you see is what you get. He's going to be a one-note, you know, one-tech plugger, which is fine. It's just not what's valuable in the NFL today. They'll have that 6 defensive line spot open, and, you know, we'll see what Dunbar thinks of McCullers. They thought enough to bring him back. You got Greg Gilmore sitting there. You got this Kendall Vickers kid. I got a report coming on that Tuesday. So, you know, we'll put them all in and see who comes out on top, and who knows? Like I said, they could go outside the organization and grab someone there if they want to.
How far have you drilled down on Matthew Thomas?
I think pretty well. I mean, I did the report on him. You know, he's a high variance guy. I think everything's going to be in his hands. You see the athleticism. You see the ability to one gap. And when he reads the play correctly, he can be an impact player, create chaos behind the line of scrimmage. But he's just so darn inconsistent. He has trouble finding the football. He has trouble getting off some blocks when he gets engaged. He's got to do a better job with his, you know, run pass keys and just his key in the ball in general. You know, he's got as many good plays as he has bad plays. So it's a guy that with the right work ethic, and if his past and his troubles are behind him, which let's hope they are, he can make an impact. But he's no guarantee.
Why don't you recap and tease the film room that went up on Monday with you talking about the dime linebacker and what it means to do to the Steelers defense?
Sure. Yeah, it was just a real general overview. I didn't want to get too into the weeds about football nuance and X's and O's. I just kind of wanted to, because, you know, when Edmonds talked about playing the dime linebacker spot, that kind of created a little bit of a stir and otherwise kind of dull rookie minicamp of what that means. And it's just when the Steelers go with their 2-3-6 dime defense, 6 defensive backs in the field, you'll have, you know, a 6 defensive back replace Vince Williams at that buck linebacker spot. Now, will that be Edmonds? Maybe. Will it be Morgan Burnett? Maybe. Will it be Sean Davis? Maybe. We don't know. I don't think the Steelers know yet. But yeah, I just wanted to give an introduction of what that means, what the dime defense does, where that guy lines up at, and what his role is going to be, and all the hats he has to wear. So it's just a real kind of general overview. And as we talked about before, Dave, right after the draft, you know, I think they're going to put all these guys in different spots. I think you're going to see, in the preseason at least, you're going to see Edmonds play down near the line of scrimmage. You're going to see it from Davis. You're going to see it from Burnett. And they're just going to get to know these guys and see who does what well.
Do you like the pick of Edmonds a little bit more than you did a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's just getting to know him a little bit more. But I like the pick when it first happened. I think most of the people were against it, and I understood it and saw the value in it. So I haven't changed too much just because I was already kind of there. But like I said, it solves a big short-term problem in that dime defense. Who's that 6th guy? And then I think, obviously, everyone knows the long-term value they hope he brings as well.
Who else of these undrafted guys?
That what I think could make it, or just intrigue
just,
me?
Just are intriguing. I mean, obviously, I mean, it's going to be a long shot for all these guys. I mean, look, in the past, we've thought that player X has the best shot, and it's it's always somebody else, you know. But I mean, I understand why people are excited about Quadri Henderson, but I mean, he's going to have to really have a Stefan Logan preseason, I think, in order to make it.
Yeah, as much as he talked about what he has to do as a receiver and things like that, which is true, I mean, he's got to make sure he shows well as a return guy, because that's going to be his primary value. He's not going to carry enough on special teams elsewhere or as a receiver, you know, standalone to make this team with the other guys that are in the mix. So, you know, we'll see what he can do. You know, we'll see how these new kickoff rules affect the value of the return game. Does that increase the value a little bit? Does it decrease the value? We'll find out. Other undrafted guys,
have you dug into Franklin much?
No, I think Josh Carney is going to do the report on him. I know he was ultra productive, a big back, the way the Steelers like him. So, you know, I don't think he's going to make the 53, though.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm trying to even remember the one full game that I've watched of him. It might have been. Did they play Wisconsin this past season, or was it the season?
I couldn't tell you.
I think it was the season before. I think that was the game that I've watched of him from two seasons ago. Patrick Morris is intriguing. I think the center. Gilmore, maybe Gilmore's the guy that we end up talking more about by the time you get to training camp.
Yeah, I had him on my initial 53 as that sixth defensive lineman, because I think he can play end, he can play nose tackle. They gave him, tied for the highest signing bonus, what, $15,000, which is not the sale end all, but it just shows general interest and intrigue in him. With that sixth defensive line spot open, Gilmore could be a guy. You got the Toledo kid, Denier, I think is how you say it, the Toledo outside linebacker with the lack of depth there. Now, I wasn't super blown away by his tape. There's a lot of things he's got to work on, never dropping into coverage. I think he's a okay athlete. He's got to be a more consistent player, especially with his effort and chasing the football. But, you know, the lack of depth there could you know, carve out a spot, even if it's on the practice squad. Then the other guys, we've gone through most of them. Jamar Summers from UConn, the corner. Oh, he's just okay. He'll be practice squad at best. Some of the others, you know, we'll see what Patterson and Prince can do with the tryout guys. And that should cover most of the group.
Yeah, and really, I mean, the futures this year is kind of blah, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to get too excited about any one particular futures class. I mean, I can't remember half the names right now. One name to keep an eye on, not that I think he's got any chance to make the 53, because he doesn't, but Matt Weil, I think he's going to do kicks and punts this year, because he's only the third specialist on the 90-man roster right now. There's no one else, and he's done it in the past. He's done both kicks and punts in, I think, college and the NFL. So, you know, it's not too often we see a guy that pulls double duty, but, you know, that'll be kind of interesting to see how he performs.
And for those of you listening that are good at math, you might notice that the Steelers, 91 players under contract right now, according to the NFLPA site. And you're probably wondering, you know, how can that be? Well, keep in mind that Ryan Shazier was placed on a reserve PUP list. He no longer counts against the 90-man roster. The international kid, what's his name? Christian
Scotland Williamson.
Right. He was added after the draft, and the rules when it comes to those international players, you're added after the draft, they're not supposed to count against the 90-man roster either. So those are two really exemptions right there. And what was the other one we were talking about today?
Well, there's just Jake Rogers and his status. He's been claimed. I mean, you have it in the NFLPA report. He just hasn't shown up. He wasn't in rookie minicamp, which kind of surprised me, and we haven't seen anything official from the team, but it sounds like he is a Steeler.
Right, he most definitely was claimed. Look, people, it just goes to show you, the Steelers.com, their website has not had a banner year when it comes to keeping it updated, because they left off who was the defensive end, Casey
Sales.
Sales, yeah, they left him off most of the year. or most of this offseason off there. And I think it wasn't until you brought it. That, hey, make no mistake about it. They read Steelers Depot, at least our Twitter feeds, because not long after you, I think it was you that posted, or I forget which one of us, but it all magically it showed up on Steelers.com, and they have yet to add Jake Rogers, and he was claimed on May the 2nd, I think, off waivers for the Texans. So watch for him to magically appear on the roster here in a day or so here. So that's where they're at, you know, roster wise, and as we just talked about, you know, it's not going to be uncommon to see, you know, some guys come and go here over the course of the next couple weeks. You're probably going to see an undrafted free agent or two, you know, not make it. I think last year, I'm trying to think how many didn't make it to the training
about
camp.
About half the class, I think.
Right. I mean, they started falling off pretty quickly there. Yeah. You know, people are going to speculate they should sign this guy or this guy, you know, veteran moving forward. There's just not a lot out there right mm-hmm. now on the free agent market.
No, I mean, I'm against taking, you know, people say Navarro Bowman. I mean, if the Steelers didn't like any of the rookie linebackers, I don't know what they're going to like more in Bowman. I think really you'd mostly roll with your guys until midway through camp and you get a good feel for the 90, 91 that you have. And then you make any trades or any other, you know, moves then. But I think you're in the, you know, you have what you have, you evaluate your talent, you see what injuries happen, and then, you know, you react. I don't think there's any reason to make too many big moves right now.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the Steelers aren't going to be signing wide receiver Brandon Marshall. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you see a headline that says that, you run away, Steelers Nation. You come here to Steelers Depot because we're not going to write that garbage.
The edge rusher. I mean, right now, Arthur Motes looks very attractive.
But, yeah.
I mean that respectfully, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, you know, he is a little bit older and all like that. And, you know, look, I'm not advocating them adding him back by any stretch of imagination. But when you look at what's available free agency wise and you know, outside linebackers, you know, the devil you know sometimes is the best. Now, mm-hmm. we'll see what ends up happening with him if he gets an invite back. I'm really disappointed they didn't address that position more during the offseason, Alex.
Yeah, I am too, because depth is really thin. I mean, they talked up Chicklo, but I think David Todd had the really good stat maybe 2 weeks ago that, you know, when Dupree and Watt were healthy, Chicklo just didn't play. So I mean, that kind of tells you how they feel about Chicklo. David, let me, I don't know how much you want to go down this rabbit hole, but, you know, what do you think about Shane Ray? I had an article a week ago, kind of just floating the idea with the Steelers' interest in him. The same way they took Bud Dupree, they had a pro day dinner with him. So there was an interest level in Shane Ray. Now that Denver's drafted Bradley Chubb, that's kind of going to push Ray out. They declined his option. Any interest there if you get midway through camp and you feel like the group just doesn't have enough depth?
You know, I just I was kind of just lukewarm on him prior to him being drafted. Out of Missouri, and I gotta admit, I haven't watched a lot of him during his time at Denver or concentrated on him a lot. the guy in Denver I've had my eye on is Shaquille Barrett.
I know
that is how in the heck they missed that. Shame on them. I mean, Joey Porter and his connection with that kid. If that and it sounds like all, well, you know, they just needed a few more dollars in the signing bonus, and they would have had him. You know. So
yeah.
That,
what was the story? Whether he had an offer, but it wasn't enough. Do you remember what happened with that?
I think it was. Yeah. I think Denver. I think he liked his roster chances a little bit better in Denver, and then. I can't remember exactly, Alex. I want to say it was like a $5,000 difference in the signing bonus or something along those lines. I can't remember if he got like $25,000 or $15,000, but I know it was higher than what the Steelers are. Just, I couldn't. And this is a guy talking about Barrett, too. I can remember writing about him way before the draft, even saying, look, this is a guy that fits. you know, what they do. And, of course, the relation, you know, it was easy to connect the dots with him, with Joey Porter, and all going back to when Porter was a graduate assistant at, where was it, Colorado State, and all like that. That's the one I'm still kind of bent over right now. Now, obviously, he would have hit, you know, you would be dealing with him. Well, heck, he was just a restricted free agent. So, I mean, you'd only be dealing with a restricted tender with him right now anyway. So he'd still be with you at this time. You could have had him as an undrafted free agent. Back out of this wormhole, coming back your direction with Ray. I mean, what do you suggest? I mean, trading for him or what?
Yeah, because I think they're going to keep him on the roster. I mean, I suggested, you know, if you get a fifth or a sixth for Shane Ray, I'd be tempted to do that. I'm not even saying that I personally would want it. I'm just saying their own interest. I wouldn't have written that article if they hadn't shown a good amount of interest in him coming out, given their first-round pedigrees. They love the first-round picks, whether that's trading for Justin Gilbert or signing Justin Hunter, or, you know, the list goes on and on. I'm just saying this is a guy that 2 years ago had eight sacks, and I would love to have a guy right now to have eight sacks and outside linebacker.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know, if you give anything for him, you know, being as how he didn't have his fifth year option picked up, you know, he's good as gone after the season. You know, unless you're able to sign him to a deal.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm looking just for short term help. If it's 1 year, I mean, I can live with that. Gilbert was 1 year. Maybe that wasn't the plan, but that's how it turned out.
Yeah. I mean, look, anything's. I worry. Look, Keon Adams, we don't know who he is right yet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we are giving him – we're basically giving him a spot on our 53-man rosters right now because we have to.
And as a number four linebacker, not even as a number five.
As a number four. You know, we don't even know if he how effective he can be on special teams. We haven't even seen him because of that shoulder injury. So, I mean, we've gotten to a place right now where we're giving guys who have never taken a snap a roster spot just because they had, you know, their temperature's 98.6.
Yeah, so that's the concern. That's why I suggested the idea. And, you know, I know that Dupree and Warner are going to be the guys, and they're going to play 80 to 85% of the snaps when healthy. But if there's an injury that happens there, Steelers could be in trouble. So I think you got to at least keep that door open. I'm not saying to do a deal now with Ray. I would not do it today. But if you go into training camp, if you're not happy about Keon Adams or Chickalo, or if there's an injury, I think it would make sense.
I think you keep your eyes open right now. I mean, we're in that time of year now where a guy with, you know, a couple of $1 million salary on another team after the draft, after these rookie mini camps and all like that, teams might start parting ways with a few players. And if you could get one 25, 26, 27 years old, almost really what, you know, the situation kind of with Arthur Motes, the situation that he had following, you know, obviously he was signed a little bit earlier in the offseason after his first four seasons with Buffalo. But that's the kind of guy that you're looking for. You know, it all sounds nice to go after these veteran guys, these, you know, experienced pass rushers and all. But as I've written and said many times before, the Steelers just don't go after these wrong side of 30 defensive guys, and especially if they're a backup and don't play special teams, because I mean that's just not the type of guys that they go over. Now, injuries or whatnot could force you to go after a guy like that, but in general, those are not going to be the guys that they go over. But with that said, when you look at the available, you know, experienced 3-4 outside linebacker types on the market right now, It's just not there right now. And where are you right now? I mean, this time last year you were thinking Dupree maybe double digit sacks in 2017. Where are you on Bud Dupree 1 year later?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm definitely not at 12 sacks like I thought it would be last year. Now, again, I do think injuries hindered him last year. I think he had that shoulder injury that was a lot worse than people know. It was really bad, especially early in the season. So I don't really have an expectation level for Bud Dupree. I don't know what you're going to get with Dupree, and that's certainly a concern and one of the biggest issues and question marks for this defense right now, maybe this whole Steelers team. But I know he needs to have a good season, and to get in that 8 to 10 sack range would be a huge boost to this group.
He's got to have he has got, I mean, you know, $9 million plus fifth year option was picked up. He better live up to it. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, you got him on the cheap, obviously, one more year before you have to pay that money. But, you know, the team sounds like they have a lot of confidence on it. But, let's be honest, it just hasn't been there on tape yet.
Yeah, and when I say 8 to 10 sacks, I mean, I just want to get sacks wherever you can get them. But, you know, the high-quality ones, and even good tape study on this, Dave, the high-quality sacks really have not been there. When he's gotten pressure and sacks, it's been through a lot of scheme, through a lot of effort, which is fine. I mean, you take him how you can get him. But you'd like to see him really kind of show that first-round pedigree on more reps than he has.
Yeah, I mean, you trip on your way to the quarterback and still sack him. I'm good with that. But you would still like to see, you know, what, 45, 50% of the sacks be higher quality ones? And he just does not have a resume of high-quality sacks just yet.
Yeah, so hopefully he takes a step. And Watt, I think Watt will take another step. And if they let him rush a little bit more than last year, then that'll hopefully get him close to 10 sacks. But again, even if both those guys do well, one injury to either one of those guys, which, you know, there's decent odds that are going to happen when you have two guys that are playing 85% of the time, you know, you want to have that depth. And Chicolo's been a really good camp star, and he's a versatile piece. And I think there's confidence in him from an assignment standpoint. But is he going to be that dominant pass rusher who's going to really get a lot of pressure? Not really. And then behind that, you have your unknowns. You have your Adams, you have your, you know, Farrington Huguenins, and, you know, potential Arthur Motes and whatever else is there.
Boy, it seems like before you were born when the Steelers had double digit sacks from their outside linebacker. What, 2000 and was it 10 or 11?
11, yeah.
Woodley and Harrison. Boy, now you know why every year I tell David Todd I like to see this draft about 5 edge rushers.
3 quarterbacks, 5 edge rushers. That's the plan. I think 2011. I think the only guy with double digit sacks since that Harrison Woodley tandem was Hayward last year. That's it. 1 over 7 years. That is not a Steelers defense.
Yeah, exactly. Don't forget pulling guards and block and all purpose tight ends. I have to have about 2 each of those as well. All right. Boy, David Todd and I are not going to have a thing. I'm glad we got that. I'm glad there's no show on Friday because there's probably not going to be anything to talk about. The Steelers are essentially off for a little while here. The OTAs don't get started until May 22nd. I could not have picked probably the best week to take off, right? I mean, good luck filling up Steelers Depot with content.
Yeah, Dave, thanks a lot. Le'Veon Bell says he'll be back, though, for week 1. So
yeah,
that.
I still think they get something done, Alex. I know you think? Don't. I still think. So
you just think his mom's going to yell at him and just hold him by the ear and make him
yes, sound like a... basically, yes. Look, it's now or never, you know, him. It's got to get. I mean, we're 2 months away from the deadline. So
yeah, is it the 16th?
I think technically the 15th. But you know, I think the 16th is the actual deadline on the NFL calendar. But you know, Kevin Colbert talked about it recently, yada yada. But we've been talking about the Steelers wanting to get a deal done with Le'Veon Bell for, geez, it seems like 4 years now. But I mean, obviously it just goes back to last year. I still in my heart of hearts, Alex, I think they get something done with him. And it's really just the gut feeling, blind faith aspect of it all.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they do. I want to see it get done, obviously, for the right number. I don't want to pay him $17 million a year. I just, you know, we don't have to rehash it, but I just don't know what's changed that's going to make Bell want to come down enough for the Steelers to come up enough to find that perfect matching number.
I guess one of the things David Todd and I will be talking about next week, and I know you have zero interest in talking about it because you're wise with your money, but gambling, the Supreme Court, essentially with their ruling earlier today, legalized sports gambling, probably on the way to your very own state, wherever you might be. New Jersey, obviously, probably going to be the first one up and running. I think other states already have some laws in place or legislation on the table that will allow them to get there quickly. I mean, overall, here's the biggest question. And there, you know, there was a quote from Mark Cuban and all, or his reaction on it, saying how, you know, valuations of sports franchises are now going to essentially double or you know, just go astronomical thanks to this ruling. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure how I get that. You know, I mean, is sports gambling going to be that big of a thing that it gets more people even interested in sports? Maybe that's the aspect of it. But, kind of out of nowhere, at least in my radar this morning. But overall, you know, that, I think this is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know much more about it than I do, and so does David Todd. I know PA has either some laws enacted or ready to be enacted to legalize sports betting. So obviously, it's something that'll be state by state. But so I think you will see it happen soon in Pennsylvania.
Of course, I live in Las Vegas, so that's not an issue for me as far as I'm concerned. But of course, that kind of dominated the sports news cycle today. The Steelers are favored in 13 of their first 15 games, and as we've seen time and time again, you know, that won't mean a lick of anything probably come week three or week four of the season. But I did find it interesting that the only team that they're not favored over right now at this point is the Saints in week, 16, I believe. And they're not favored. It's a pick'em game in the middle of the season game against the Baltimore Ravens. And that game obviously on the road, as is the one against the Saints late in the season there. The Steelers are 1-point favorites right now over the Patriots later in the season when those two teams get together again, and against the Jaguars on the road in Jacksonville, they're a point favorite as well too. So, you know, look, the same time last year, I think they were favored in, I think it was the same amount. I think it was 13 of their first 15 games they were actually installed in favorites in. And, of course, they went on to lose three games, one to the Jaguars, one to the Patriots, and one to, do you even remember the other loss?
The Chicago.
There you go, Chicago Bears. Yep, mm-hmm. That was a game they should have won as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got anything else to add before we start rolling up the sidewalks here?
No, I don't think so. But anyone has any content they'd like me to write about, please send it in, because I don't know what I'm going to do here these next couple days.
I'm getting out of town at the perfect time, and you better beat Matthew Marksey to it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. He's going to be all over.
Boy, yeah, he's going to be clawing at you to save save some meat on the bone for whatever interview.
Two hobos fighting over a sandwich. That's going to be me and Matthew the next couple days.
Yeah, and Matthew, if you listen to this, I'm sorry I did not leave you a morsel on that Jalen Samuels interview today. I ate all the meat off of that bone already. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in. And look, I mean, if you do have any ideas for content next week or something you want Alex to research next week, send them, tweet them, get at him at Alex_Kazor on Twitter, and he might just take you up on your offer, because it's going to be that lean probably next week there. Now, saying that, I'll go out of town. They'll sign the rest of the three draft picks next week. They'll sign Le'Veon Bell, and they'll probably trade for somebody.
I'm hoping so. I'm rooting for it.
All because I'm out of town. Thanks for listening, everybody. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, if we entertain you like clowns, you can make a donation that way by going to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button. Upper right navigational bar. There will be no show the remainder of the week. David and I will be back with you with the next edition of the Terrible Podcast on either Monday or Tuesday. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.